Professor Beber is assistant professor at NYU's World Family Department of Political Science. His research uses statistical analysis and formal modeling to study international conflict and cooperation. His research has focused in particular on the causes and consequences of international mediation in wars. Thank you, Professor Beber, for speaking with the Global Observatory today. Still a relatively young discipline, what can you tell us about the current state of research on conflict prevention? Which trends do you observe? Are there different approaches across regions, that is, depending on the origin of the researcher and the location of the conflict? How do you see the field evolving?
I think there are a number of questions that researchers in conflict prevention have really made a lot of progress on. And I would group them in four categories, I think. The first one is contextual factors. I think researchers have linked the effectiveness of conflict prevention to structural factors, not surprisingly, since structural factors also have an effect on conflicts themselves. So geography, ethnic composition of a populace, economic development, all constrain conflict prevention just as much as they constrain conflicts. The second set of factors that researchers have linked to conflict prevention are attributes of the conflict. So the intensity of a conflict, for example, constrains effectiveness of conflict prevention. The third set of factors are features of third parties engaging in conflict prevention. So here in particular, I'm thinking about leverage. I'm thinking about incentives, sanctions, carrots and sticks, even the deployment of military force alongside diplomatic action. That usually only works in the short term, I think researchers have found. So there's potentially a trade-off with respect to the long-term consequences of this. But I think researchers have made progress in terms of linking this as one example of a feature of a third party to outcomes of conflict prevention. And finally, current research, I think, increasingly so, is turning to asking questions about the characteristics of the preventive action itself. So I think increasingly so, researchers are asking, what is it about particular attributes of conflict prevention initiatives that help make conflict prevention, make that initiative a success? One aspect in particular I have in mind here is the question of timing. I think that's actually not something that we found only recently, but I think it's many people agree that the timing of conflict prevention is actually important in terms of the efficacy of conflict prevention initiatives. Usually the earlier we can intervene, the better. So I think there are areas in conflict prevention research where we have made solid progress. And I think there are two trends in research on conflict prevention. The first, I think, is that researchers have been paying more and more attention to characteristics of initiatives themselves, as opposed to structural factors. I think we've established a number of findings with respect to features of the conflict, features of the context. But I think increasingly, people are interested in figuring out what is it about initiatives themselves that make a difference? What is it about features of these initiatives? So in some ways, I think there's a turn to a micro-level analysis, moving away from a macroscopic analysis of the conflict to asking specifically about the characteristics of particular missions. What is it that's making a difference here? And the other trend I think that I see in research on conflict prevention in recent years is a trend away from just correlative analysis to trying to estimate causal effects. So this is very tricky, of course, because conflict prevention, just like really most interactions in international relations, are fraught with complicated strategies. But I think researchers increasingly pay attention to the question of why do you see particular attempts at conflict prevention in the first instance, because that will help us disentangle then the question of whether a conflict prevention effort really made a difference or was it just reflective of a particular intervention decision in the first instance. So I think there's a trend away from just being satisfied with the correlation to try to really figure out, either in quantitative terms or in qualitative terms, whether it was the conflict prevention, as opposed to other spurious confounding factors, that really made a difference in terms of the conflict do think that there are differences, certainly, in terms of the research that that academics conduct across the world. I think in the US, we tend to favor quantitative and analysis that favors strategic thinking very heavily. That's not always the case elsewhere. But one nice thing, I think, another trend perhaps in research is that you see researchers increasingly connecting across the world, right? So it's very, very easy now for me to engage with research elsewhere, much easier than it probably was even just 10 or 15 years ago.
There is often a certain disconnect between the work of policymakers and that of academics. How can and how should the insight from the academic study of conflict prevention inform policymakers?
I think the interaction between practitioners and academics is a sometimes complicated one, but I think one that could be extremely useful. And I see at least three ways in which we could make it more fruitful than it currently is. The first is that I think there is a tremendous opportunity for practitioners to engage in more data collection. So most of the data that researchers use nowadays is collected from media reports, which is good as far as it goes. But given the fact that practitioners could collect this data while they're engaging in a conflict prevention effort, I think it's not as good as it could be. I think if researchers actually managed to work closely with practitioners, we'd be able to get the data directly from the source, if you will, as opposed to having it collected from news reports. I think there really is a tremendous opportunity for data collection to be done more systematically by practitioners with researchers. And I think that would really help us understand much better what it is about conflict prevention that works and that doesn't work. The other way in which I think practitioners and researchers can work more closely together is in the systematic evaluation of particular programs. And that goes beyond just collecting data on the program, but I think it can extend to even thinking before a program is started about the design for evaluating the program after the fact. I think looking at the evaluating the effectiveness of the program is not just something that happens after program completion, but it's something that should be on the agenda from the inception of a program. And I think researchers would be excited to work with practitioners in trying to come up with designs that will allow us to do just that. And I think practitioners would be excited to learn what the effects are of their programs. And finally, the third way in which I think practice and academia can work more closely together is in terms of us academics framing results to a greater extent in categories that are actually of relevance to practitioners. And I have to remind myself as a researcher frequently of thinking about particular problem, not just in the frames that I've acquired within my discipline, but also thinking about in terms of the categories that matter to practitioners. That's a challenge to researchers, and I think one that we can and should meet, and that would really help in bringing academics and practitioners closer together.
If I can keep asking you to think as a policymaker, what measures in your view are necessary for the international community to be able to genuinely prevent conflict with a long-term perspective rather than merely reacting to the latest crisis of the day?
In order to prevent conflict from a long-term perspective, what I think you need is effective early warning system. I think it's important to obtain information on conflicts, not just in reaction to particular crisis moments, but really as a matter of routine practice. That's not always as easy as I think as it may sound. Often you hear that the problem is not so much the ineffectiveness of early warning, but the gap between warning and action. But I think there is actually a fundamental problem that we as researchers face as well when it comes to identifying cases that could escalate to violence. The question in evaluating the efficacy of early warning systems is, among others, one of how you identify whether an early warning system accurately reported that a case is not likely to escalate relative to other cases. I think it is actually quite difficult and I say that as a researcher, but I imagine from a practitioner's perspective, just as much, quite difficult to predict cases that are likely to escalate. And it is, for that reason alone, not that easy to divorce oneself from wanting to focus on the cases that are in crisis, as opposed to taking a long view and a more comprehensive view, and really making sure to pay close attention to a larger set of cases that may escalate at a later point. So early warning is crucial, and I think it is actually quite challenging and something that deserves our attention, both from a practitioner's perspective and also from a researcher's perspective.
Finally, you have done work on international third-party mediation of armed conflict, and in particular on strategies to increase the effectiveness of mediation. What are your thoughts on the role of mediators? Does, for example, the mediator's nationality matter? What kind of authorities should the mediators be given?
Now, the nationality of mediators does appear to matter if you look at the data. For example, American mediators appear to be relatively more effective than other mediators. Now, it's a question to what extent that's really about nationality per se, or it's just a reflection of the U.S. being able to bring greater leverage than other types of mediators to the table. But you do see variation in terms of rates of effectiveness when it comes to nationality, or when it comes, more generally speaking, to the identity or to particular characteristics of the mediator. In the case of the U.S., for example, or more generally, it could be a question of leverage. It could also be a question of informational attributes. Mediators vary, for example, with respect to the amount of information they have at their disposal about particular conflicts. And of course, that matters with respect to the extent to which they can effectively mediate different scenarios. Now, as far as the authorities that should be given to mediators are concerned, mediators, of course, I think, appreciate flexibility in being able to structure a bargaining situation. But it's important to keep in mind that just in any other negotiation situation, constraints can actually translate into a significant amount of bargaining leverage. A mediator who is constrained by the sending organization in particular manners, for example, can use that for moving disputants at the bargaining table, maybe in ways that he wouldn't be able to move them without that constraint being imposed from outside. So I think constraints and authority is a somewhat double-edged sword. On the one hand, you want to give flexibility to the actors, to the third parties who are actually going to be on the scene. But on the other hand, it's important to keep in mind that operating under constraints is actually not necessarily a bad thing. It can translate into leverage, not of the conventional kind, not of the military kind, not in terms of sanctions or carrots and sticks, but leverage nonetheless in a bargaining situation with disputants.
Dr. Weber, thank you very much for talking to the Global Observatory today.